from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
We are 15 years into this new century. 15 years that dawned with terror touching our shores, that unfolded with a new generation fighting two long and costly wars, that saw a vicious recession spread across our nation and the world. It has been and still is a hard time for many. But tonight, we turn the page. Tonight, after a breakthrough year for America, our economy is growing and creating jobs at the fastest pace since 1999.
That was U.S. President Barack Obama Tuesday night as he delivered his annual State of the Union message before a joint session of Congress in Washington.
Our unemployment rate is now lower than it was before the financial crisis. More of our kids are graduating than ever before. More of our people are insured than ever before. And we are as free from the grip of foreign oil as we've been in almost 30 years.
But not everyone here in the U.S. was buying into the message that the economy has made major strides. We'll have more on that later in this newscast.
We're demonstrating the power of American strength and diplomacy. We're upholding the principle that bigger nations can't bully the small by opposing Russian aggression and supporting Ukraine's democracy and reassuring our NATO allies. Last year, as we were doing the hard work of imposing sanctions along with our allies, as we were reinforcing our presence with the frontline states, Mr. Putin's aggression, it was suggested, was a masterful display of strategy and strength. That's what I heard from some folks. Well, today, it is America that stands strong and united with our allies, while Russia is isolated with its economy in tatters. That's how America leads, not with bluster, but with persistent, steady resolve.
Not surprisingly, the president's words about Russia were not well received by Russian officials. We begin with this report from Press TV.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said attempts by the West to isolate Russia over eastern Ukraine won't produce results. Lavrov made the remarks at a press conference dominated by questions about the crisis in Ukraine. He added that Moscow is determined to resolve the conflict in eastern Ukraine.
We hear statements from our Western partners calling to isolate Russia. President Obama declared this in his State of the Union address. However, all these attempts won't produce any results.
Lavrov added that Russia believes the West is supporting radical thoughts in Ukraine. He warned that Western countries escalating the situation have to understand that events in Ukraine will affect all neighboring countries. He also said that President Putin's peace plan calls for heavy weapons to be pulled back from the front line. Lavrov also insisted that the territorial integrity of Ukraine has to be preserved. He urged the U.S. to resume constructive interaction on an equitable basis. Radio host of Voice of Russia, Dmitry Babich, joins us now from Moscow with more insight on that story. Mr. Babich, it's great to have you with us. Those were rather candid and forthright comments made by Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. He believes that the United States wants to dominate the whole world. Please share with us your views on these recent statements made.
Well, of course, Lavrov was reacting to yesterday's speech, State of the Union, by President Obama. And in that speech, Obama called Russia's activities in Ukraine an aggression. And he also said that Russia is isolated and its economy is in tatters. Of course, Lavrov had to react to this kind of statement. First, the statement by Obama was untrue, because if you come to Moscow, you will see that life has not changed significantly since the beginning of the year here. And second, of course, it's pretty difficult for Lavrov to admit, this is a bitter truth for all of Russians, that the United States and the European Union seek a change of regime in Russia. The problem is that in all the cases when the United States and when the EU tried to change regimes in Syria, in Libya, in Iraq, it was always a terrible civil war, you know, the result, and the new regime was usually much worse than the previous one. The same is true about Ukraine. You know, under Mr. Yanukovych, controversial as he was, there was a political dialogue in Ukraine, and Ukrainians from both East and West were trying to resolve their differences in the parliament. Now the parliament is completely dominated by the Ukrainian nationalists from the West. Just recently, that parliament rubber-stamped mobilization of 100,000 more Ukrainian men up to 60 years of age. They should go to this meat grinder in the east of Ukraine. It's very unpopular decision, but the Ukrainian parliament blindly followed what the president, President Poroshenko, told them to do. So these are all very, very sad developments, and Mr. Lavrov just summarized them.
The Russian foreign minister, in his Wednesday press conference, pointed out the inconsistencies in the U.S. approach to last February's coup in Ukraine and such actions elsewhere.
You know, talking of coups, I would like to quote a couple of things. There's no excuse for protests turning violent. Those are criminal acts, and people should be prosecuted if they engage in criminal acts. There's no excuse for burning buildings, torching cars, destroying property, and putting people at risk. Can you guess what this refers to? That's President Obama's remarks on the events in Ferguson. No one in the West said anything of the sort about Maidan. No one. Even though there were cases of setting buildings and even people on fire. One more quote. We, the United States, strongly condemn any attempt to seize power through extra-constitutional means. You'll never guess what this refers to. It's about a coup attempt in Gambia. Nothing like that has ever been said about Ukraine. They said that in Ukraine, the people rose against the hated regime and carried out a democratic revolution. So when we discuss the various things that happen in the international arena, let's follow the same principles and criteria, so that it's clear that if a coup d'etat is unacceptable in some cases, it should be unacceptable in other cases as well.
In his speech Tuesday night, President Obama also asked Congress to authorize military force against ISIS in Iraq and Syria, despite the lack of an authorizing resolution from the UN Security Council, which has seen vetoes from Russia and China stalling several such attempts in the past 4 years. RT's Kevin Owen has more.
Washington is sending around 1,000 troops to train Syrian opposition forces. 400 are expected to be deployed within the next few weeks. The cost of funding and arming the Syrian rebels will reach about $500 million. But critics say Washington's aid may end up in the wrong hands. Some members of the fragmented Syrian opposition recently joined Islamic State, taking their weapons with them. Reaction now then to Barack Obama's State of the Union address, with Madia Benjamin, an anti-war activist and co-founder of Code Pink, Women for Peace. Hi there, thanks for being with us. And we heard Obama there a bit earlier on praise the US fight against Islamic State and support for the Syrian rebels and airstrikes, but he's calling for more military authority as well. So are we to assume that, therefore, that what's happening at the moment, he says, thinks, is not enough, not sufficient, yeah?
Well, his administration has already said they don't need Congress to give them the green light, that he has the authority to go ahead with his war in Iraq and Syria and basically wherever else he wants. But he is asking the Congress to give him the authority. And it seems that while he is telling the American people that the U.S. has wound down these wars in the Middle East, on the other hand, he is winding them back up. He says there's no troops on the ground, but he's sending thousands of troops troops into Iraq after he was supposed to have finished that war. He talks about the end of the war in Afghanistan, and yet there's 10,000 troops still in Afghanistan. And his signature has been the drone wars, which are raging not only in places like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, but in places where the U.S. is not at war, such as Yemen and Pakistan and Somalia. And it's interesting that he told the American people that Yemen was a good example of U.S. engagement, and Yemen is now falling apart.
Madea, there may have been some good news in what he had to say about drone warfare. He said that that needed to be reined in. Now, you've talked about that in your book called Drone Warfare, incidentally. It was good news to your ears then what he had to say about that, yeah?
Well, it's one thing to say he's reigning in the drone wars, and there actually has been a decrease in the number of drone strikes since the height in 2010, then 2011. But it seems that the drone strikes are going back up. And I think with the chaos in Yemen, instead of recognizing that the drone strikes are actually part of the problem, I think we will see an uptake in the number of strikes in those countries, in Yemen. And unfortunately, I think we're seeing more drone strikes recently in Pakistan as well. And in Afghanistan, he said the U.S. doesn't have to use the same caution in protecting civilians as he is trying to use in other countries. So I don't think we can say the drone wars have yet been reined in.
There were also questions about a few mixed messages, such as whether sanctions are an effective foreign policy tool. RT's Gayan Chichikayan has more.
The president has asked Congress to authorize the continued war against the Islamic State terrorist group. The U.S. is already carrying out airstrikes against ISIS in Iraq and Syria, but President Obama says it's going to be a long fight, and that's why he needs the authority.
American leadership, including our military power, is stopping ISIL's advance. Instead of getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East, we are leading a broad coalition, including Arab nations, to degrade and ultimately destroy this terrorist group. We're also supporting a moderate opposition in Syria that can help us in this effort.
President Obama also said the U.S. reserves the right to act unilaterally as it goes about fighting terrorists around the world. Then he went on to speak about what he sees as his administration's foreign policy successes. On Russia, he said sanctions are working. Quote, Russia is isolated with its economy in tatters. That's how America leads, not with bluster, but with persistent, steady resolve. End of quote. It was interesting to hear about persistent, steady resolve because in the very next sentence, President Obama went on to speak about how the decades-old policy of sanctions and isolation against Cuba has failed and how his administration decided to finally end that. On Iran, he said, quote, new sanctions passed by this Congress at this moment in time will all but guarantee that diplomacy fails. So the president told Congress that he would veto any new sanctions bill. We heard a lot about American leadership and how it should lead, not only in the fight against terror, but also in global economy. Here's an example of such leadership.
China wants to write the rules for the world's fastest growing region. That would put our workers and our businesses at a disadvantage. Why would we let that happen? We should write those rules.
President Obama was speaking about the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement that he's pushing for, but the way he put it sounded like a zero-sum game where one side wins and the other has to lose, whereas many in the world, you know, would like to see a more win-win approach in U.S. foreign policy. There was little in the speech to indicate that. In Washington, I'm Ganesh Chagan, RT.
We'll have more on the Russian view of the president's speech later in this newscast when we speak with Crosstalk host Peter Laveau from Moscow. Fighting has resumed in Donetsk in eastern Ukraine. Authorities there say that five people were killed in the last 24 hours when army shells struck residential areas in the city center. We have this update from RT's Roman Kasarev on the ground in the eastern Ukraine city of Donetsk.
The war continues here in the east of Ukraine, and on Wednesday morning, the shelling of residential areas of the city of Donetsk had resumed as well. Multiple areas have been affected, and I have a very long list of various apartment buildings that have been destroyed. And right now, let's take a look at the consequences of what happened here on Tuesday. residents in Donetsk live in constant fear for their lives and those of their loved ones. But as their experiences prove time and again, the rockets can come at any time.
Where are you hiding?
Here, in this house.
The district emergencies ministry chief says it was near impossible to perform their duties to save people's lives.
The yard outside just took an incoming. There are nine-story apartment buildings located in this neighborhood, plus a kindergarten and a grocery store. Those are high-voltage transmission cables just outside our station. They've been severed and are now hanging low right there. And we can't go outside right now because of the massive barrage.
According to official UN figures, nearly 5,000 civilians have lost their lives in the east of Ukraine. Those numbers seem far from final. Roman Kosarev, RT, Donetsk.
Another international rights organization has condemned Israel for human rights abuses. This time, it's for abuse of Asian migrant farm workers in the settlements. Press TV's Kavi Tavwe has more.
Human Rights Watch said that 25,000 Thai workers in Israel are being exploited. The New York-based group said that Tel Aviv is doing nothing to stop the abuse. The group said the laborers are forced to work longer hours and earn lower wages than the legal limits. It said the situation is made even worse by unsafe working conditions and poor housing. Local NGOs say the Human Rights Watch report supports their findings. They say the agricultural sector is a greenhouse for labor and human rights violations of migrant workers.
Meanwhile, more than a dozen diplomats from nearly as many countries visited the Gaza Strip to witness firsthand the plight of its 1.5 million residents. Stephanie Kutrix reports from the United Nations.
Some 20 diplomats from 9 countries have visited the Gaza Strip to better understand the situation facing thousands of Palestinians this winter, according to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA. A 50-day conflict, which started last July between Israel and the Palestinian faction Hamas, led to the deaths of 2,000 Palestinians and 70 Israelis, as well as widespread destruction of property. An ongoing blockade since 2007 also continues to impact all aspects of daily Palestinian life. During their visit, the diplomats met with displaced Palestinians and discussed the need for long-term solutions for the coastal enclave. Many are living in makeshift shelters or prefabricated housing units, which are vulnerable to the cold and rainy winter weather. By the end of January, UNRWA says it will run out of money for repair and rental subsidies, which will have what it called a disastrous impact on families. Stephanie Kutrix, United Nations.
President Obama made some harsh statements about Russia during his State of the Union address Tuesday night, and those were not well received in Russia. To get more, we spoke with Peter Lavelle, who hosts the popular program Crosstalk on RT. He spoke with us via Skype from Moscow.
Well, you know, this reminds me of August 2008 in Georgia, where everybody, CNN all the way down the line, Al Jazeera, BBC, all they did was take press releases from Saakashvili's people. Now they're doing it again with Poroshenko's people, just taking press releases, no fact-checking, no double-checking. Absolute fiction is what's going on here. As a matter of fact, over the weekend, it was Poroshenko's forces that started an offensive in the Donbass. They have violated the ceasefire repeatedly and grossly, and now it's in complete tatters. But of course, Barack Obama is going to repeat the trivial fairy tales given to him by Victoria Nuland and the rest of them there at the State Department.
You know, I saw that on Monday and Tuesday, the Ukrainian army shelled a hospital on Monday and a kindergarten on Tuesday, and I'm wondering if that had happened in Syria with the Syrian government, targeting the terrorists there, hitting a hospital or a kindergarten, what kind of play that would get here in the media, because this got nothing.
You know, it's just the death of outrage for us here. I've been on your program before. You know, I'm looking out a window right now, and it's the same foliage that is in the Donbass, or what I should say, Novorossiya, because it's a new place now. It gets a new name. And And these are ethnic Russians being slaughtered. These are children. These are civilians. Human Rights Watch is coming out and saying the same exact thing that I've been saying for months. There's atrocities being committed. Atrocities are committed on all sides. Let me be clear about that. But the initiative for more force and violence to be used is coming from the Kiev regime. The people of Novorossiya simply want to be left alone. They do not want to be ruled by this regime in Kiev. They didn't vote for it. Their president was illegally overthrown with the assistance of the United States in February 2014.
Yeah, you say the assistance, with Nuland handing out cookies and John McCain giving speeches inciting people to violence and to a coup.
But John, just think, what would have happened if Putin or Medvedev had gone to Ferguson? What would have happened? What would have been the media reaction? No, but everybody and their grandmother related to the political elite in Washington can hand out cookies and lots of cash in Kiev. But, you know, think about putting the shoe on the other on their foot. People would be outraged. People cannot see from the other side. This is the biggest problem with this story and other stories like Syria, like with Iraq. I could go on and on. This is a really critical time in the American media space because it is completely blind to what of realities on the ground.
You know, if you you talk about looking, looking at it from the other side. For example, in Baja California, which is part of Mexico, the little thing that looks sort of like Florida on the West Coast that pokes down from California, there are lots of retired Americans that live there. And it has never been a part of the United States. As a matter of fact, most of California was a part of Mexico, along with other parts of the United States. If the Mexican government decided to go into some of these retirement communities and started shelling them or killing people there or, you know, calling them all kinds of names in the media.
Like terrorists.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What do you think would be the U.S. government's response to that?
There wouldn't be a response. We'd just have a body count in Mexico City. Would be no response. Come on, Don. The days of diplomacy ended with the end of the Cold War. John Kerry, is he capable of any kind of diplomatic settlement of anything?
Right.
No, he has to rely upon Vladimir Putin to bail out the president of the United States in Syria. No, you're absolutely right. But Americans no longer can see it that way. Do what we say. We're going to break the law with impunity. I mean, this whole thing with the International Criminal Court. I mean, the United States calls this, it's lost its vision, it's lost its purpose. Absolutely not. The International Criminal Court now is needed now more than ever before. And no, it's the Americans are going to start going around, parroting what the Israelis say, and going to try to defund it. I mean, that's not looking for justice.
You know, the United States, by the way, isn't even a signatory to the Rome Treaty.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What's the perception on the ground in Moscow of, the latest round of activity in Ukraine?
I think, sadly, is what I've seen over the last year, people that would have been more sympathetic to Western overtures or a Western point of view or quote-unquote values, which we could have a separate program on that, they've really soured on the United States. They have really soured on the European Union. The perception in Russia is the Americans are these kind of juvenile cowboys that just globetrot around the world causing mischief. But they expected more from the European Union. And the European Union and Angela Merkel and its head, de facto head, has lied repeatedly and miscalculated when it comes to Ukraine. So, if whatever Barack Obama wants to say, the economy in Russia is in a tough spot right now. It's because of oil prices, has nothing to do with sanctions. But what's happened here in Russia, it has completely marginalized any kind of liberal opposition to Putin. I mean, even they have to say that they think Crimea should be part of Russia,
right?
For obvious reasons. So it is if the United States and its allies think they can change, quote unquote, change Russia's behavior or change Putin's behavior, they have again grossly miscalculated. The level of patriotism in this country now, I have lived here for 17 years, I've never seen it at this level, at this height. They're behind the leadership, they trust the leadership, and they've gotten good results. And President Putin has come out and said, we need to tighten our belt a bit. And everybody said, fine, let's do it. Let's do it together. There's unity here.
The president's claims of major improvements in the U.S. economy received mixed reviews here at home. CPR's Bernard White spoke with Larry Hamm, chair of the People's Organization for Progress in Newark, New Jersey, and Charles Barron, former Black Panther and New York City Council member, who is now a member of the New York State Assembly.
What did you think about the State of the Union speech? Who's going to go first?
I will yield to Assemblyman Barron.
Well, thank you. You know, we're not looking for performances or articulation. When I finished hearing it, I left with the question, a state of what union? Whose union was he talking about? Because it certainly wasn't the union of Black America. He certainly wasn't talking about the conditions in Harlem or Bed-Stuy or in rural and urban Black communities across the country. Because when you look at the state of those unions, you'll see double-digit unemployment. And he's talking about unemployment coming down to 5.6%. Not in my East New York. We're up at 14%, and that's similar in other places in the country. State of what union? He couldn't have been talking about the poverty that's 30% in Harlem, 33% in other areas, and as high as 40% in some communities in the Bronx. That's higher than the poverty that the Egyptians suffered that caused them to revolution, that caused them to call for revolution. So he didn't address any of poverty. He couldn't have been talking about the life expectancy that has increased in terms of the distance between white life and Black life. We're dying even younger and younger. He couldn't have been talking about the state of the union of around infant mortality rates, because that's even getting horrible in our communities. He certainly couldn't have been talking about the state of police violence. Ferguson is just one piece of the pie. He had an opportunity to talk his chief. He had an opportunity as president over the last 7 years to really do something and punish police precincts that engage in profiling by not giving them funds, or police precincts that engage in profiling, brutality, and murder by seeing to it that his Department of Justice sends them to jail. We don't need new training. We don't need cultural sensitivity. Send them to jail, and I'll buy them a Black history book to read for the 20 years to prepare. So I was not impressed. He's still pushing an imperialistic foreign policy that's calling some freedom fighters terrorists and some terrorists freedom fighters. He still allows Israel to kill 500 Palestinian babies and a total of 2,100 Palestinians, 85 of them in the Gaza Strip, innocent civilians, because they were shooting rockets at them that never reached Israel proper. And the ones that did, the American Defense System intercepted them. 67 Israelis died. 64 of them were soldiers that came into the Gaza Strip and were killed in combat. 3 were civilians. He couldn't have been talking about peace abroad, dropping drones in Pakistan, and war all over, took out Muammar Gaddafi, still has embargoes and sanctions against Mugabe because he liberated himself. So I wanted to know what union was he talking about?
Some of the things he was saying, it sounds good, but we know the reality is that most, if not any, of these are not going to become law, because now the Republicans control both houses of Congress. They control the Senate and they control the House. And they are dedicated to not letting anything get through. And Obama said last night that he's going to veto, so we'll see how much he vetoes. But the Republicans, we know, when they didn't have control, and they only had control of one house, they were dedicated to opposing all of his policies. And now they got control of both houses, so the likelihood of any of these major proposals he made last night of becoming policy or law is slim to none. So a lot of this talk is really to set the stage for the presidential election in 16 and the election of members of Congress in 16. And it seems, you know, we have this talk that, you know, at first blush sounds good, and what it's really designed to do is to keep the Democratic base, that is those who vote Democratic, to essentially keep them in line. You know, it's like a shepherd herding sheep. Keep the sheep all together, keep them in line, And, you know, eventually, I mean, what happens to the sheep? They either get shorn or they're sent to the slaughterhouse. And that's what's happening now to the masses of black people, poor people, and working people across this country.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.